What's up, everyone? The Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast is back, and thank you so much for being with us. By us, I mean your co-hosts. I am Arthur Arkish. He is Bob Laguerre, and I believe, Bob, this is the first time that we've had the pleasure of podcasting together, and we certainly got a busy Tuesday to take care of it, didn't we?
Yeah, it's been a more entertaining offseason than we're normally used to with the Bears, and get some even more questions heading into the offseason.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. They are creating questions. The big news of the day as we tape here on Tuesday, Jarrell Freeman is going to be released. He's already been informed of that decision by from Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy and his staff. The move is not surprising. Freeman was limited to 13 games over two seasons with the Bears and was suspended twice for PEDs last year. And the move will save $3.5 million toward the Bears' salary cap. The other decision that Ryan Pace has made, and it was first reported by NFL Media's Tom Pelissero and Ian Rappaport Tuesday afternoon, Bob, is that Josh Sitton, the former Pro Bowl guard, will not have his option, I believe an $8 million option, exercised. So the 31, I believe soon to be 32-year-old, will hit the free agent market, and seemingly the Bears now have at least one more need to address.
Yeah, maybe two at guard. Kyle Long is a total question mark at this point. Played hurt all last year, didn't play that well. Neither did Sitton after going to the Pro Bowl as an alternate after the 16 season. I think Sitton's still a serviceable player. It's a little puzzling that they would walk away from him with Kyle Long still up in the air. And Kyle Long had a neck surgery already, hinted at the time that he might have more surgeries in the future. I'd say he's 50-50 to be in the opening day lineup this year. And maybe they feel better about that than we all do, because I don't think they'd have gotten rid of Sitton if they didn't feel good. They've got Eric Kush coming back, who was going to be their swing guard last year. Missed the season with a hamstring. Wound up starting Tom Compton, a journeyman, five times. And Bradley Sowell, who had been a backup tackle for most of his NFL career, actually started a game at guard. I know there's people who are going to put the dots together and say, well, the Bears are definitely drafting Quentin Nelson with the number 8 pick in the draft. And that makes a lot more sense now than it did yesterday.
Yeah, you're right. That's Bob Laguerre. I'm Arthur Arkish. It's the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. Check us out if you haven't already. Subscribe to us, I should say, on iTunes and leave us a rating and a review while you're over there. That would be super appreciated. Loot Crate is our awesome sponsor. Check them out too, lootcrate.com. The best surprise you know is coming. And we are just breaking down what has turned out to be a very busy Tuesday. No team, actually, Bob, has been busier in the NFL on Tuesday, with the exception maybe of Mike Glennon's former team, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who have cut both Doug Martin and Chris Baker. So you raise an interesting point about Quentin Nelson. I'll throw a couple other names in there and then throw it back to you. Hronis Grisou, I realize the former third rounder, the Oregon center slash guard, whose NFL career has gotten off to a really rough start. Whenever he's been on the field, it hasn't been pretty. And of course, he's got a torn ACL in there, too, that cost him, I believe, it was his entire second season. But Hronis Grisou is still on the roster, and he's going to see a familiar face as his coordinator now with Mark Helfrich. I think it would probably be quite the leap of faith, some blind faith on the Bears' behalves. But how do you kind of think he fits into this equation potentially, if at all?
Well, I think if you ask most people, they will tell you Hronis Grisou's only position in the NFL is at center. He's undersized. He's underpowered. He's not as strong as most of your interior linemen and not nearly as big.
Yeah.
He's a technician to some point, and he was being groomed to be the starting center when he got hurt 2 years ago. Whether he can come back and do that, that remains to be seen. That would be great for the Bears, because it would allow them to move Cody Whitehair from center back into a guard spot, and maybe then they're in a lot better shape than we think they are right now. But the other move we mentioned, the Jarrell Freeman thing, not surprising either, but it's going to give, barring any more off-season activity, Nick Kwiatkowski a great opportunity to be a starting inside linebacker for this team. He started 13 games the past 2 years, but it was always because of injuries to other guys. So he's going to, it looks like, get an opportunity that he has not had in the past.
Yep. Good call. And I think Nick Kwiatkowski's ready for that. He's received excellent coaching from Vic Fangio, and we've seen impressive strides from him. Certainly is a downhill thumping type, but I think maybe even a few flashes in coverage and handling himself in space. So I don't worry about that, you know, that move or that series of moves as much, assuming that Danny Trevathan can stay on the field, which of course has been an issue for him too. So, the Freeman news doesn't come as a surprise. Again, he's got the multiple suspensions and was always going to be, I think, kind of a little bit more of a stopgap, came in a little bit older than Trevathan to begin with. So, and there's a lot of uncertainty, of course, with Christian Jones. He's a guy I'd like to see the Bears consider bringing back because I like his versatility. I like the way his arrow is pointing after coming in as an undrafted guy in 2014 under Phil Emery. But again, he's a free agent and he might be seeking starters money elsewhere. And I don't know if that'll be part of the equation for him here. So, Bob, you look at the 2017 Bears captains. We had Mike Glennon, Josh Sitton, Jarrell Freeman, Quinton Demps, and Sherrick McManus. The chances to, so we pretty much know three of those guys are gone. We've learned today, of course, about Freeman and Sitton. I assume it's a fait accompli. I'll throw it back to you in a second with Mike Glennon. Is there a decent chance all five of these guys are gone? I mean, Sherrick McManus is a free agent, and what do you think about both Glennon and Demps?
Glennon absolutely gone. Demps, I don't know that, you know, he was a guy they brought in because they weren't really sure about Adrian Amos, and I don't know if they're sure yet, but he certainly had his best year of his career last year.
Amos.
Whether that makes him an NFL starter,
yeah,
I'm not sure. They know they've got Eddie Jackson, and they're set there, and he looked great as a rookie. If they can get Adrian Amos to take another step, then they're in pretty decent shape. They still don't have a lot of depth, but remember, they've got three guys from the 2016 draft, three fourth-rounders, who were drafted as safeties or safety-slash-cornerbacks. Talking about DeAndre Hall, they've really not gotten a lot from those guys. Deion Bush kind of regressed last year after getting seven starts as a rookie. DeAndre Houston Carson looks like more of a special teams guy, and he did very well in that role. I don't know that I ever see him as a starting safety. And DeAndre Hall, they have to make up their mind. Is he a safety or a cornerback? They couldn't tell last year because he spent most of the season on IR, but he's a guy who certainly has potential and has great size to be playing at corner.
That's Bob Legere, and I've got lots more questions. I want to get back to both Sitton and Freeman here in a minute, but let's stick with the secondary because I didn't know I was stepping into it this morning, Bob, but I fired off a tweet Tuesday morning just saying that I thought for the Bears it would make a ton of sense to set their sights in free agency on the 49ers' former first-rounder, Eric Reed. I don't remember exactly how I worded it. Maybe I said he should be their top priority, and maybe that's where I got myself into trouble. But, Bob, I didn't know there were this many Adrian Amos defenders in the world, much less in my Twitter timeline. I've been getting killed all day. What's your opinion on Amos? Let me throw it out there quickly. As a former fifth-round pick who started like 40 games or so in three seasons, he's exceeded expectations, and I will be the first to admit that. But I feel that some Bears fans' judgment has been clouded by certain sites like Pro Football Focus and Bleacher Report that had Amos among the best safeties in football last year. And that's not dealing in facts. I mean, he's got one interception in his career, and I think it was 10 passes defense. I was crunching the numbers this morning because, like I said, I was getting killed. Where do you stand on Adrian Amos and whether the Bears could stand to upgrade opposite Eddie Jackson or whether you're believing in him coming off that career year?
Yeah, I think they can upgrade on Amos, and I know why Bears fans like him. He's a physical guy. He will help you in the box. He's not ever going to be a great cover guy. He's not ever going to be the guy who can move into the slot and cover a slot receiver. And, you know, I think he can cover half the field deep, but I don't think he can make any plays on the ball. on either side of the field. He's a pretty sure tackler, and he's a physical guy, and that's what he is. He's a guy, if you start him, you're always looking to upgrade over that. Now, is that their most pressing need? I don't think so. I think Amos is a guy you can live with, but I also think you can upgrade on him. And you know, the wild card is Quentin Dempsey. They brought him in as a guy who did and had made plays on the ball in the past, and accepted that from him. He never had a chance to do that. So whether they keep him around for another year at, I think, age 32 to see if he can beat that guy, I'm not sure about that. But it's an area that, to me, isn't a glaring weakness, but could use an upgrade.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And you're right. I believe Quentin Demps was either led the AFC or was the co-AFC leader 2 years ago in interceptions. And certainly Ryan Pace thought he was bringing in a ball hawk to try and help a defense that now, I think, 3 years running has set franchise futility records for takeaways. Demps, was it a broken arm or a broken leg? I can't remember now. Broken arm, right?
Broken arm, yep.
Yeah, okay. So that's, at age 32, if there is silver lining of those types of injuries that cost you a season, I guess you'd rather have it occur up high and not worry as much about his explosiveness or anything like that. But I don't believe it's a foregone conclusion that Demps will be back. We'll have to kind of wait and see on that. This has just been the first wave of Bears moves that, again, have made some major news today, but it certainly won't be the end. We mentioned Mike Glennon, and there are going to be other names coming. So what else did I want to ask you about, Bob? So we've got – there's Jordan Morgan is also on the depth chart inside for the Bears as a potential, and that's all we can call him at this point, as a potential option to replace Josh Sitton or at least get into the competition, because he redshirted as a rookie coming from, what was it, D3 Kutztown, PA? I believe he was one of the Senior Bowl guys that the Bears coaching staff had the chance to work with. Is that right?
Yeah, they were impressed by him at the Senior Bowl. But that's a long way from being ready to play in the NFL. And I think that they made that determination very early on last year during training camp, that this was a guy who was not going to help him as a rookie. He did at least a year to develop. And I don't see that guy coming in as a guy you can plug in if you need because of an injury to somebody else. I think he's a guy who maybe spends another year on the practice squad or as a maybe being active on game day occasionally, but I don't think he's a guy that coaches trust at this point to come in and be able to start or even play significant snaps at this point.
Yeah, he's a total wild card, and he falls, in my opinion, under the same category as Eric Kush, not because Kush didn't have a really impressive stint in 2016, started four games and really acquitted himself well, but more so because he is, of course, being inherited by this new coaching staff, and there is going to be a scheme switch, and we just don't know what this new staff's feeling will be with Eric Kush. And he's, as Bob alluded to, coming off the torn hamstring, so questions there as well. In free agency, Bob, before we get to, because we got to talk Kyle Fuller too, the franchise tag window opened about 90 minutes ago, as we sit here and tape Tuesday late afternoon, and I definitely want to get into a little bit of Kyle Fuller discussion with you in our first podcast together. But before I do, could you see the Bears being big players at guard in free agency? You know some of the names out there. Andrew Norwell is the biggest one. Justin Pugh of the Giants. A lesser-known name, though, that I'd throw out there is Zach Fulton with the Chiefs. Not only played under Matt Nagy the past three seasons, but before that actually played under Harry Hiestand at Tennessee. And he's gained some valuable NFL starting experience. So that's one name I would throw out there, but I'll throw it back to you. How do you expect them to attack this? Is it going to be through earnest free agent investments, through the draft, maybe both, or do you think they'll kind of roll with what they have?
I think Norwell is, not that they don't have cap room because they do, but Norwell's going to cost them a lot of money. I see more help available in the draft, and there's a lot of guys, I think Greg Gabriel may be one of them, who thinks of the guard talent in this year's draft is better than the talent at tackle. Mm-hmm. Now, no Bears fan is going to be excited about a guard at number 8. It's not a sexy pick, but it might be the best thing they can do, not only for the team, but for Mitch Trubisky. I think, a lot of people have called Quentin Nelson the safest pick in his past. I think if he's sitting there at number 8, you got to think long and hard about it, because I don't think after Norwell, there's a guy you can bring in who's definitely an upgrade. Kush is a guy a lot of us wanted to see last year because he's been around the league a little bit. And, he's got the added factor of having a great collection of tank tops, maybe the best collection in the league. good guy, and it was a shame that his season was wiped out before it even started. But he's a guy, if, you know, not necessarily a starter down the line, but certainly a guy they have confidence in as a swing guard down the road. At least that's what last year's staff thought.
Sure. Yeah, Eric Cush, of course, of the former Hard Knocks tank top fame, was there in Jeff Fisher's final season when the Rams were featured on Hard Knocks. And I guess I have to, Bob, I can never pass on a chance to take a little slight Jeff Fisher shot. Maybe Eric Cush's success the year after he left the Rams is sort of akin to, you know, what Nick Foles and Jared Goff and Case Keenum all did as soon as they got out from that offensive coaching staff that Jeff Fisher had there in the final season with the Rams. So
yeah, that seemed to work wonders for a lot of guys. So it wasn't an isolated instance.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And who knows, Jeff Fisher's sitting somewhere thinking that his phone's about to ring with another head coaching opportunity. So, and I did also have to...
There's not in the NFL.
I did have to make one other silly joke, Bob. For a minute there, it sounded like you were going to recommend Greg Gabriel as an option to potentially upgrade the Bears' pass protection inside. And I was going to say that anyone who watches Greg Gabriel on Twitter, we know what a great scout he is, but he's also a bit of a tenacious social media participant. So I wasn't sure if we were throwing Greg's hat in the ring as a potential upgrade for the Bears offensive line as well.
No, I think, you know, there's a lot of guys, aside from everybody knows about Quentin Nelson, but I think Greg's got maybe four or five guys, guards behind him who could go later in the first or in the second round. So, you know, guard's a position where we've seen through the years, third and fourth round picks can be plug and play starters on day one. And, you know, if the Bears don't take Quentin Nelson, I think they have to address guard at least by the second day or early in the third.
Yeah, I think so too. And who knows? Bears fans have kind of been pining here for a while already for the stars to align and Quentin Nelson to be available at number eight. And it's certainly possible, guys. And I think the logic behind it certainly increased with today's move. Not to say you'd be precluded from going with a guy like Nelson, you know, regardless of sitting status, because he's going to be 32 years old. But it may just make too much sense if the opportunity presents itself. Last one on the offensive line, and we'll take a few minutes, Bob, and talk about Kyle Fuller and the franchise tag situation. What's your level of concern? I feel like the last Bears staff, I don't want to say they ruined him. I shouldn't say that. Injuries have played a serious role in it as well. But I hated watching Kyle Long get bounced around the way he was after it looked like he was about to become an all-pro, a perennial all-pro guard. He spent the year at right tackle. Yes, he went to the Pro Bowl, but it wasn't as good. Wasn't nearly as good as those first couple seasons. Then he goes back inside and starts getting hurt. I worry about the cumulative effect of this stuff, and you mentioned Cody Whitehair as a potential candidate to move to guard now. He's been moving around a bunch too. I'm kind of prude when it comes to this. I like to see guys, when they have a bunch of success in one spot, get locked in and see how good they can be. How worried should I be if Cody Whitehair moving positions is one of the potential byproducts of today's news?
I don't think that's as big a concern as some other guys. And I agree with the moving Kyle Long outside was a mistake. If you've got a perennial Pro Bowler at one spot, you don't move him.
Right.
You know, right tackle really isn't a more crucial spot than guard, especially when you've got a guy you can put in for 7 or 8 years and count on him going to the Pro Bowl and protecting your quarterback from pressure up the middle. But Cody Whitehair played mostly guard in college at Kansas State. Actually, center was the only position, the only O-line position he didn't play there.
Yeah.
And he's got some versatility. And moving back to guard is not going to be a big adjustment for him. And he's got enough size. He's got enough strength. I don't think that's an issue with him. Certainly, Cody Whitehair to guard is a much, much easier move than Hronis Grassou to guard. Hronis Grassou, really, and nothing against him because he's a great keyboard card. He's got some bad breaks. But he's a center and probably a center only.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And that's a good little factoid that I always forget about. It's so ironic that Cody Whitehair played every position except for center. And he was an all rookie, of course, for the Bears as a second rounder. It's kind of like Adrian Amos, Bob. Everyone worried only about his tackling coming out of Penn State as a fifth rounder. And I think we could probably all agree that's been his strongest asset through 3 years in the NFL. So it's funny how those things work out. you know, from time to time. But we got about 10 minutes or so left on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. He's Bob Laguerre. I am Arthur Arkish. I'm sitting in for Hub. He's going to probably do more of these Well, we're probably going to rotate. We'll all get in on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast fun. We appreciate you guys being in on the fun, and make sure you head to iTunes and subscribe. I think, Bob, you know, even after these big moves today, Josh Sitton, you know, was the second big domino to fall of the offseason. But in my opinion, there's not going to be any bigger personnel decision that Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy face than what to do with Kyle Fuller. So why don't you just kind of set the stage for our listeners and let them know where you're at as the franchise tag window is now officially open.
Well, the franchise tag, the projected franchise tag for top five salaries of cornerbacks is going to be $15 million this year. They haven't set the salary cap yet, so we don't know that exactly.
Right.
But it's going to be in the $15 million range. You would think Kyle Fuller is a guy, multi-year deal is, you know, probably $10, $11 million a year. And he's a guy who just turned 26. I mean, legitimately, could be around for 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, playing at peak efficiency. He played very well his first 2 years. He came in with great fanfare. He had two picks, I think, in his first game, which he didn't even start, and played well his second year, a little bit down. And, you know, it was kind of mystifying that he missed an entire season with a knee scope. But, yep. You know, he bounced back from that, and he played great all last year. He made been burned a few times, but if you remember, Arthur, teams picked on him repeatedly, and you know, I was never sure why after the first few games, because it wasn't like Prince Lucamara is a shutdown guy on the other side. He's a good player. He's probably an above average cornerback, but to me, it seemed, you know, I didn't understand the thinking of going at Kyle Fuller week in and week out. The guy had 22 passes defense, which was, I think, three times more than anybody else on the team. And, you know, even more impressive than that, he played really physically, more so than he had in the past. And that was never a knock on him, but he was even more physical last year than he had been in the past. So I think with all the other question marks they have, he's a guy you lock up for a long time, and that's something you don't have to worry about going forward.
I'm with you. I just, it depends obviously on the numbers. And of course, it's not we're not the ones writing the checks. Grateful for that. But, you know, if he's going to attract Stephon Gilmore money, you're talking upwards of $45 million guaranteed. I'm not sure that I'm comfortable with that before I see him do it one more time. And that's why I think that the franchise tag is such a viable option here, because and I don't know what Vic Fangio's thinking. I don't know what Ryan Pace is thinking, but it was pretty clear that Fuller was in the doghouse in 2016. As you mentioned, he missed the entire season after that August knee scope. It was equally clear that he bounced back and proved to be a really coachable young player last season. You didn't see him making the same mistakes. As you mentioned, we saw a ton of urgency from him for sure. I guess I just wonder, you always wonder with these guys when the light bulb just kind of flashes on in a contract year. And it's hard with Kyle Fuller in particular, because he's a tough nut to crack in that locker room. We've all heard him say about 12 words in the 4 years we've spent with him. Do you get a sense, though, that he may be the kind of guy you have to worry about giving the big check to, and wondering if that urgency is going to if it's going to persist or maybe drop off a little bit?
You know, it's a concern. You have to think about it. You have to wonder if he's going to play as hard going forward after he gets the contract as he did to get the contract. And based on the way he played the first 2 years, I would say there's absolutely no doubt about that.
Yep.
But based on the 2016 season he had, you have to at least, you know, and they know him better than we do. And it's funny, Arthur, that you mentioned Vic Fangio, because Vic Fangio straight up called him out in 2016, and now it seems like Vic Fangio has become one of his biggest backers.
Right.
I think it happened after he played a couple rounds of golf and Vic beat him. Maybe that helped, but yeah, I think, you know, you saw a guy turn around as much as anybody on the team. You know, I think maybe behind Team Hicks, he was probably their defensive MVP last year.
Yeah, I'm with you, and this isn't new for Vic Fangio. I know his reputation for coaching linebackers maybe more than anything precedes him, but Look at what he did in San Francisco with guys like Dante Whitner, and there were other guys. Someone else came over from Washington too, I believe, who kind of reinvented themselves a little bit under both Vic Fangio and Ed Donatell. So it's going to be fascinating to see. I guess I still am. I'm hoping the Bears can try and find a happy medium here where it turns out to be more Janoris Jenkins, Logan Ryan type money, some of the big deals we've seen in recent seasons that were kind of a notch below Stephon Gilmore. But it's hard to say exactly what it's going to be because it's sort of a similar pedigree, I think, Fuller and Gilmore, that is, former first rounders. We've seen a little bit more ball production from Gilmore, but still, I'm not quite sure what Kyle Fuller's camp is going to be looking for exactly. As Bob mentioned, the Bears' salary cap isn't going to be an issue. After today's moves, gosh, they've got to be up, I think, closer to $50 million than 40, at least 45. So there's going to be some cash to spend. Just on the way out, Bob, what do you think? What about Amakamura? I mean, are these things mutually exclusive? Do you see a need to bring him back if you get Fuller back? How does the fellow outside starter, and then I guess I'll throw Bryce Callahan into the mix as well here, how do you view those dudes?
Well, yeah, I'd like to see them both back just because that locks down one position. Bryce Callahan's a restricted guy, and you know, you'll hear the argument from people that, you know, they can let him come out late and put Bryce Callahan out there. But Bryce Callahan has always played better inside, which is also Craven LeBlanc has played well inside. I don't think either one of those two guys are best on the outside. I just think they kind of lack a little bit of size, a little bit of physicality.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, if you have one of those guys as your nickel and then the other guy is your fourth defensive back or your fourth cornerback and dime, then I think you're in pretty good shape. But Amukamara is a guy I think is, to me, a lot more replaceable than Kyle Fuller. Amukamara is a good cover guy who has never at any point in his career ever made plays on the ball. He is a good cover guy, and you can win with him. I don't think you're going to win because of him, because of the plays he makes on the ball. He's got 7 picks in 7 seasons. I think he's had 1 in the last 3 years. If you can get him for a reasonable price, which you did last year, I think you re-up him for another year, and you know, and then you can look maybe down the road at adding a guy to replace him, a younger guy. But I think right now, if you bring him back as well, then you don't have to worry about the secondary at all.
Yeah, that is spot on analysis. I couldn't agree more. I think Amukamara is kind of a steady cover guy, but he's not going to flash the way we've seen Kyle Fuller. And I think Bryce Callahan, too. I'm not sure that he's – I don't know if he's ever going to be big enough and strong enough to hold up for 16 games. That's my concern with him. He's a restricted free agent. But, man, we've seen – both in coverage, making plays on the ball, and then even just as a really aggressive tackler in run support, we've seen some really impressive plays from Bryce Callahan, and you always wonder, he's a tremendous athlete. I remember he tested like through the roof, but size is his one limitation. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with him too. Bob, let's kind of leave on this note, because you made another great point in there. If the Bears are able to bring back both Kyle Fuller and Amukamara, at least say 2 out of these 3 guys, if you count Callahan the restricted, you can kind of potentially cross corner off the list of concerns. There's another team. It's Matt Nagy's former team, the Chiefs, who have been very active at the cornerback position already this offseason. Kendall Fuller, Kyle's little brother, actually, was a part of that Alex Smith trade. And David Amerson, the former Raider, has also reportedly signed with the Chiefs. When I see teams acting this early on, as the offseason begins, it kind of tells me sometimes how they view the rest of the free agent class and the draft class at the position. So I'm dot connecting here, certainly, and I don't know that new Chiefs general manager Brett Veach is having conversations with new Bears coach Matt Nagy or anything like that. But it's just something to keep in mind, because I can tell you, Greg Gabriel has told us already, it's in the draft magazine. Go find it on newsstands starting next week. There's decent depth at corner in this upcoming draft, but not after the first couple rounds. It's a premium position, and if you're looking for starters, you need to pounce on them early. So will the Bears do what the Chiefs have potentially done and kind of cross that need off the list before free agency and the draft even arrive? Something to keep an eye on for sure. I think it would make a lot of sense, but we'll have to wait and see if that's what does happen. Bob, before I let you go, just tell the listeners what else we got cooking this week. Obviously, PFW heading down to the combine next week, but what else you got on your plate, Bears-wise?
Well, you know, we haven't even mentioned the elephant in the room, and that's wide receiver. And the Bears are going to be taking a hard look, not only in free agency, but about the rookies coming out and guys at the combine. And Calvin Ridley was a popular pick for a lot of mock drafts for the Bears at number 8. I don't think he's worth the number 8 pick. I think he probably is the number 1 wide receiver in this draft. But Greg Gabriel, among other people, have pointed out that the strength in this year's wide receiver class is the depth and the fact that you're going to be able to get guys who are viable starters in the second and third round and maybe even a little bit after that. So I think that's an area the Bears are going to look at harder than anything else at the combine.
Yeah, no doubt. And that means we'll be taking a close look as well down in Indy next week. LeGarrette will have it locked down with your Bears coverage daily for sure. So make sure you are locked in at profootballweekly.com/Bears. Bob, I have to thank you. I know you are trying to keep water out of the basement today. It still took time for the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. So I know the listeners appreciate it. They appreciate having you on board and offering your great insight to this podcast.
All right. I'm running out of buckets, but I think it looks like it's starting to stop raining. So I think they may be out of the woods.
All right. Well, our fingers are crossed for Bob that everything is okay in the basement and by him. And the same for all the listeners. Hope you guys are staying safe and enjoying the off-season coverage of Pro Football Weekly. Keep it locked in. We will be back with a new podcast from Indianapolis next week. And we really appreciate you guys being with us today. Thank you so much.